Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you so much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Greg at 7 o'clock. You're tuning to the SAFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. And on the show today, we're going to be taking a look at reimagining sustainable entrepreneurship with the South African Future Trust. They recently held the South African Future Trust Summit that concluded today. We're going to speak to the chair of that and get a sense of what that was all about. We also have a conversation with the Chief Operating Officer of the Standard Bank Group, taking a look at women in leadership and what is happening in Cape Town at the moment at the IWC conference. Then we're going to speak to the Chief Executive Officer of Sappi Limited, the company that gave us an update on their performance for the year. They released their full year's results along with their last quarter's results for the year ended September 2025. We're going to get a sense of that performance and what the market has made of it. We also have a conversation with the team at Carling, a Black Label and SAB, celebrating 130 years of SAB being a business and being part of communities in South Africa. And then we're going to wrap up the Thursday with a conversation with the team at Capitec about how they're supporting small businesses.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
As usual, we kick off with a sense of how markets have been moving throughout the day. I'm joined on the line by VIP account manager at Prime XBT, Kiarabile Nonyana, to take a look at this and see what we make of it. Lovely having you on the show, as always. Sense of your thoughts around today's markets. It seemed as though we are finding some form of stable footing. I suppose as long as you're not in the crypto space, they've been on the receiving end of some negative price movements lately. But what do you make of today's markets?
Yeah, it's a bit confusing, Jimmy, at the moment, and I'll tell you why. Because on some of the days of trading, the same reason the market is down on the next day is the reason that the market is up on that day. Mm-hmm. I think on our market in general, we saw quite a positive market, and that's just on the back of the fact that resources got sold off about 4.65% yesterday on the Resi 10. So you look at the likes of Sibanye, who came out result, Anglo Gold, Harmony. So you can see it's still the gold play and people coming back and finding some value after the recent sell-off. But right now, if we're looking at global markets, it's red across the board. I mean, the tech one, the Nasdaq right now is down 1.5%. The S&P 500 down 0.76%. Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 0.81%. And all showing that there's a massive sell-off in the U.S. just on the back of the AI trade, and looking at the fact that Palantir came out with results a couple of days ago, and that's scared off the market.
Something you're saying, Kia, that is sticking with me is the fact that one day markets are up for the exact same factors that they're down. And it makes me wonder whether or not, from a volatility perspective, we're fully pricing in everything that markets are trying to, or maybe markets are trying to price in too much sentiment at this point, considering how hard we've run this year.
You know, I was looking at a stat the other day. So since 1928, there's only been six times where the S&P 500 had 6 months of a higher close going into the end of the year. And this year is the sixth time. When I look at the AAI survey of investors and institutional fund managers in the US, it's sitting at 46, meaning it's at bear market territory. So you're sitting with sentiment being bearish while the market is very bullish. And those are the confusing signals which are happening. And the only conclusion that I can come up with, Jimmy, at the only point in time is I had a look at the performance of U.S. fund managers for the past quarter, and they're behind their benchmarks. So all I can say is one of the reasons that the AI trade still persists right now is people are chasing performance, and they're willing to pay 200 times earnings for it.
Yeah, what does that then do for valuations? I mean, if people are willing to pay premiums across the board for what they perceive to be strong performance, in some cases it's not even performance related. It might just be wanting to pay a premium to not miss out on a market or a trend movement. What does that do for valuations?
It keeps them at frothy levels, even to a level where you think you're in a bubble. I mean, I was recently listening to a market analyst on one of the American business shows, and he was saying that he thinks that some stock, the stock was Microsoft sitting on a forward price earnings of 29 is not bad. I mean, in comparison to where others sit, and if you had to get a median forward price earnings, it'd probably be around that number. But for me, that is quite concerning. Even though we're seeing median PE since the global financial crisis in the US start to tick up, I think right now valuations have not found a foundation and firm footing, and hence why even during bull markets such as these, you see sell-offs like which are happening right now.
So, Kia, what do you then do from a market's perspective? How do you navigate what is essentially some of the choppiest waters we have seen? We're going into quite a wind down period historically, but if anything, this year is anything to go by, it could very well be the exact opposite of that.
I think so too, and we're just looking at the S&P 500. Genuinely, in the last quarter, if they're coming in with a positive third quarter, in the last quarter, 75% of the time, it ends up closing at record highs. So if you're going to take a bet, you'd probably say that the market is going to close at all-time highs, whether locally or sitting across the pond. But the problem that you sit with right now is that it always becomes the next new news that affects the market. Going back a week ago with the Fed statements seeming a bit more hawkish, you saw a sell-off. You come back, you see softer earnings, you see a sell-off. Yet the next day, if there's a good earnings beat, you'll see buying. And those are the contradictory signals that continuously keep me up at night. And looking at the one safe haven asset, which is truly a barometer of where markets are supposed to be, either bearish or bullish, is in bullish territory, in gold. So these are all these different signals which are really contradictory all at the same time, but yet we're still in a bull market.
Yeah, let's take a look at perhaps one of the markets that might be a little less difficult to explain at this point. The oil price coming below $63 a barrel. We saw it spike up when there were tensions with Russian oil sanctions from the US. We have seen those tensions simmer down, the oil prices moderated. That seemingly being one of the very few markets that's actually moving in turn with its own geopolitics.
Yeah, and that for me as well, I think a lot of dollar denominated assets have been seeing quite a risk of turn, including gold. And that's just been the fact that the dollar has just been perennially very weak, and the past few weeks has been very strong. But I also think there's quite a supply glut in the oil market, and the fundamentals of the oil market is sharply negative. And I think right now it's weighing on the crude oil price. And I think when you're looking at the US crude stockpiles, they rose in the past week. OPEC as well producers also increased output by 137,000 barrels per day in December. So everything about oil right now is a strong dollar and increased oil output. That's just not boding well for the oil price.
What about the crypto side of things? Is that moving better than it should be? I mean, we are seeing softer crypto prices. I think for the first time in a long time, we're below 1.8 million rand on the price of a Bitcoin in rand terms. Partly that has to do with the rand-dollar exchange. But the Bitcoin price itself could very well dip below $100,000 a coin for the first time going into this weekend.
Yeah, and I think it's exactly the same reason why oil is down. It's a strong dollar. I think people are seeing more favor with the dollar because of the fact that the turn coming out of the US-China trade tensions is easing a bit, and there seems to be some semblance of sense in terms of trade. And we still do anticipate that even though there was a hawkish Fed statement, that they'll still be able to cut rates. So I think that it's no longer crypto only in the space. There's intertwined risk between digital assets and TradFi assets, and that's what you're seeing right now with the sell-off in most major coins. And that's just purely at the level of the fact that the dollar has been really, really strong.
Yeah, before I let you go, do you think that dollar strength is going to impact the rand? I mean, it is holding its own at the moment, but that can change quite quickly.
The rand is always a litmus test of where risk is right now. I think it does hold its own, but we have seen the rand take on the risk off tone more volatile than any other emerging market currency. I like where the rand is. I still believe that the rand is very undervalued, but its price is truly determined by global factors that have nothing to do with anything that we can do locally right now. Where it's sitting right now, I think it's where it's probably going to find some true value. Because when I look at the weighted moving averages, they are about to converge right now, meaning at this point in time, you might see a breakout to the bottom, and you may see it touching around about 1720 in the near term.
Well, we'll have to wait and see when that does happen and how the market responds to that. For now, we'll have to leave the conversation on that note. Thank you so much to Gerard Villanueva of PrimeXBT for joining us to take a look at market movements and some of the factors markets might be weighing up.
I think it's time for an adventure. We could visit the grandkids, check on a London apartment while we're there, or we could meet them in Dubai and look at properties along the way.
Why settle in one place when you can be a global citizen? If it's on your mind, it's on ours. Partner with a wealth banker who will connect your global banking, lending, and investments on a single platform. See money differently. Nedbank Private Wealth. We're a licensed FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
The South African Future Trust Summit has been taking place over the last 2 days. It concluded today, and I've been in attendance on both days. I had the privilege of getting to see some of the businesses we've actually spotlighted on this very show, showcasing their products to investors, to potential clients, I think the event overall has always been a successful one, but don't take my word for it, because we have the executive chair of the South African Future Trust and Oppenheimer Generations, Jonathan Oppenheimer, joining us to take a look at this year's summit as well as what it means for the efforts that they have. Jonathan, good evening. Lovely to have you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking the time. When you and I caught up about the Future Trust Summit, you mentioned that it was more than just about small businesses. It was about reimagining how we viewed entrepreneurship. Can you take us through just the vision of the summit and the vision of the work that the South African Future Trust does?
Absolutely, Jimmy, and it's great to be online with you. The South African Future Trust was sort of a COVID intervention, but we now have the opportunity to have a second go at making a real and permanent impact on society. And small and medium-sized businesses at the very, very tip of any sort of economic development program. And it's really, how do you help the small business enterprise space be as successful as possible, both internally in terms of how they work, and there we do a lot of work in terms of programs which help them, working with incredible coaches individually. You know, we have all sorts of initiatives to really support small business in their understanding of how to behave in a responsible and effective way. And some of the impact that we've seen in that has just been extraordinary, enormous improvements in profitability, enormous improvements in scalability. And that's just exciting. Then there's the second element, which is you really have to get people to interact and work collaboratively and cooperatively. And that's all about creating an environment that builds trust. And the South Africa Future Trust Summit is an environment to bring people together to start those relationships, to help them build and create the network that allows them to be successful. So instead of fighting everybody, they're in a collaborative, cooperative environment where they feel that they're being heard, they're being seen, and they can find solutions not by themselves but with partners. And so those are the two principal themes. And naturally, if we're successful, we'd love this to go on to be the most impactful small and medium-sized enterprise endeavor in South Africa, and hopefully on the African continent as well in due course.
Jonathan, we'll come back to impact in a moment. I want to take a look at what you mentioned around the collaborations and the networks that this creates. I mean, Standard Bank, for example, is the headline sponsor of this year's summit, but there were other banking partners present there. There were other businesses, more established businesses, newer businesses. Take us through just the importance of the collaboration extending beyond just your immediate network and beyond just what businesses do on a day-to-day, and actually just allowing businesses to see a broader sense of what can be achieved.
Oh, 100%. I mean, if anybody who's listening who's a small businessman, they aren't just a small businessman in isolation. They have suppliers, and the suppliers have suppliers, and pretty quickly you're into major global players. And likewise, often the customer perhaps is just a single-use consumer, but if you're in the B2B business, quite often small businesses end up being suppliers to big businesses. And so it's building that ecosystem of collaborative cooperation, which is so critical. And it's trying to find ways to make sure that everybody understands the vulnerabilities that the other parties have. And the most critical vulnerability from a small business perspective in most of our research is cash, and cash relates to time. So speedy payment mechanisms, quicker contracting processes. And the critical element in all of that is, how do we win back time so that entrepreneurs and small businesses can focus on the doing of business rather than the business of talking to people who don't feel that sort of urgent burning fire of time right behind them. And sadly, in that respect, sometimes big business is quite slow, and government is quite slow, and often we need them to make this ecosystem really prosper.
Speaking of winning, Jonathan, let's take a look at today. Today was probably one of the biggest days for the businesses that were involved, but I think this number in and of itself is a testament to the magnitude of what this potentially could mean for a business. A $1 million prize pool from an investment perspective. Take me through that. Take me through the importance of, one, motivating businesses to show them what is possible, but also rewarding businesses and saying, you know what, we understand the needs that you might have as a business, and perhaps this might be something that could help.
Well, we have, as the sort of concluding moment of the South Africa Future Trust Summit, this $1 million pitch. Now, it's important. It's not a gift. This is an investment in your business. And we had three finalists this year who individually all were exceptional. And a company called Sensit, which really provides parental support in early childhood through an app, but uses data input from the customer to improve the output for the customer, and provides anonymized data to some big medical healthcare providers, and collaboratively creates a much better preventative health domain for young children, is just was the winner. And Meg, the founding CEO, just blew the lights out. And when you hear the quality of those sorts of pitches, the quality of the kinds of businesses that are emerging here in South Africa, you've just got to believe we've got a great future ahead of ourselves.
Jonathan, before I let you go, I want to get your thoughts on how we start to reposition entrepreneurship to make it sustainable. I mean, that has been one of the big themes and the big focuses of this year's summit. But I know from conversations that you and I have had is that this is something that has been an ongoing effort from your part as well, with the various stakeholders that you get involved in. How do entrepreneurs out there that are listening to these sorts of conversations start to think about sustainability differently?
Well, ultimately, sustainability is getting to a place where you can address the two fundamental, or there are really three fundamental needs in business. And the first is, you need to give your customer something that they really want and they're willing to pay for. And in doing that, you need to make sure your employee is well rewarded for that, and also your suppliers. You're a good payer to your suppliers. So your ecosystem to make your business work. And if you can do that well, and you can make sufficient return, you can secure new capital to grow. And by doing those in conjunction with an awareness about what's happening in the environment. Now, small businesses don't necessarily play massively into climate change, but it's something that you need to begin to think about in the early days. But for me, particularly in the small business space, we really need to focus on trying to make sure that it's a win-win-win. It's critically a win for the community. And when I talk about the community, I mean the entire ecosystem around a business. It's a win for the business, naturally, because if it can't. And part of that means that the business is so successful that when it goes to raise additional capital to expand its business, the investors who look at them, whether it be debt investors through the banks or equity investors through entrepreneurs and other capital providers, say, yep, we can see a long-term future and we want to give this champion, this jockey who's already proved themselves or has this great idea and has got all the detail and we have high conviction is going to continue to be successful so that that jockey can continue to be successful. We do that and both our universe of businesses expands and the goods and services they provide expand, and that means that society writ large is better off.
Reimagining entrepreneurship and ensuring sustainability as we move forward. These are the goals and efforts of the South African Future Trust, and this is what they will continue to do. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thank you so much to the Executive Chair of the South African Future Trust and Oppenheimer Generations, Jonathan Oppenheimer, for joining us to take a look at the South African Future Trust Summit.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This feature is brought to you by the Standard Bank Group. The International Women's Forum Cornerstone Conference kicked off yesterday in Cape Town, and we're going to be taking a look at this in greater detail. We're going to be trying to unpack the importance of this conference and what it means for the delegates and those participating. I'm joined on the line by the Chief Operating Officer of the Standard Bank Group, Margaret Nienaber, to take a look at this and see what to make of it. Margaret, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Let's start with an overview of the objectives of the conference that's taking place at the moment, the intention behind it, especially if we have to look at it in the context of what it means for the future of South Africa and indeed the African continent.
Fantastic. Thank you, Jimmy, and I'm excited to be joining you this afternoon to talk about this Cornerstone Conference. I'm also a member of IWF through the South African chapter, and so wonderful to be sharing with you some thoughts. Look, I think I want to take a step back and say that I think on this notion of women, we know that women in leadership are inseparable from the broader principles of diversity and inclusion. And, you know, diversity is something that I'm quite passionate about, and it's not just about women per se. I think it's really about embracing diversity in its broader form, which also includes, you know, diversity in terms of how people think and how people show up. It's not just gender or race or other more obvious forms of diversity. And I think all of these things are important, and we've seen that companies with diverse representation within its broader context shows above average profits, it leads to broader range perspectives, experiences, problem solving. But what I also believe very strongly is that for these things to work, you can't just introduce diversity, you need to introduce the right cultures where it's actually safe to have different perspectives from the norm. And so I think, you know, that's something that we really try and embrace, but also in this instance, very much when it comes to women. And so this global Cornerstone Conference that's being held in Cape Town, it's the first time in Cape Town, it's the third time in South Africa. And I think that we've got this theme of Ubuntu, which is I am because we are. And what we're trying to do with through this conference is to bring together conversations where we strategically position women's voices to influence the global agenda on critical issues. We're talking about things like geopolitics, AI, which is very topical at the moment, and something that I think more feared than embraced. You know, Jimmy, it's so important for people to understand that AI's primary cause is, or goal is not here to replace people, but to enhance people. And then, of course, the broader economic transformation. And, you know, I'm happy to talk to you a little bit more about what IWF actually stands for. But I think, for starters, you know, the role that women play are very important. And it's important for us to create platforms where those voices can be heard and where they can influence important decisions. And this Global Cornerstone Conference for IWF, which is taking place in Cape Town, is really trying to create those platforms for things that are very topical and important at the moment.
I was going to come to that, Margaret, around the IWF, because you mentioned that you are part of the South African chapter, and that suggests that, of course, there is a global chapter. There are chapters in other countries. I want to take a look at the IWF from a network perspective. Can we just take a look at the importance of these sorts of global networks and these global communities in fostering collaboration, in allowing for the people that are part of these chapters to be able to learn from each other and to grow together?
Yeah, absolutely. So IWF, as the broader chapter or the broader organization, was started in 1982. It's got 8,000 members across 36 countries. It's a global organization of preeminent women of significant and diverse achievements across, and they engage across national and international boundaries. And really what they're trying to do is to share knowledge and exchange ideas, inspire people, but more specifically to promote strong future leadership for a changing world and currently a very rapidly changing world. And if I look at IWFSA, which is a subset of that, so IWFSA was actually started in 2000 by our former First Lady, Mrs. Zanele Mbeki, who saw an opportunity to bring some of these principles into South Africa. By the way, there's one other chapter on the African continent, which is in Ghana, but we are starting to see more countries on the African continent also embracing this. So IWFSA has got 120 members, of which 61 of those are going to be at the conference in Cape Town this week. But I think what's very important for the South African chapter is to have a strong focus in terms of nurturing future leaders. And if I look at the three pillars that we focus on to inspire, this focus on the future leaders really has had the most attention. And I think we're proud to say that over the years, we've had two key projects that we've been running. The one is a FACET partnership, where we've given more than 1,000 young women access to world-class programs, advancing them in terms of their own leadership journeys. And our flagship program is our Young Leaders Connect, known as YLC/IDEAL. And this has touched more than 400 or close to 400 young ladies, where we actively engage as members in mentorship, engagement, learning, job shadowing, so that people really can get exposure to these things. And I really think it's about paying it forward. And I think, you know, both the global organization as well as the local chapter here in South Africa has got this very strong focus on the responsibility that we have to say that we've been given opportunities in life and gotten exposure as a result. But, you know, we really do have a responsibility to pay that forward. And this conference is also about talking about that in a bit more detail.
The responsibility of future-proofing the women leaders of the world. That is the focus of the International Women's Forum Cornerstone Conference that is currently happening in Cape Town, South Africa. We're going to leave the conversation on that note. Thank you so much to the Group Chief Operating Officer at the Standard Bank Group, Margaret Nienaba, for taking us through the objectives of the Cornerstone Conference of 2025, as well as where the focus lies. This feature was brought to you by the Standard Bank Group.
When you're growing your money, you need to make the right choices. That's why at Standard Bank Private, we offer the best of everything. Our offshore investments are award-winning. We'll give you the best forex rates around. As SA's biggest home loan provider, we offer unmatched expertise. And you'll have access to the best financial planners and bankers. So why not visit standardbank.co.za to join Africa's best private bank today? Standard Bank is an authorized FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
In a world where a lot can change in 6 years, you can rest assured that Hino's 6-year drivetrain warranty won't. All Hino trucks now come standard with a 6-year drivetrain warranty, protecting your investment all the way from pistons to gears. Built to keep your business moving, supporting uptime, growth, and daily operations. Because although a lot can change in 6 years, our warranty promise won't. Terms and conditions apply. Hino all the way.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Sappi Limited released their full year's results for the fourth quarter and year ended September 2025 at 8 o'clock this morning. The numbers point to a 3.1 billion rand loss for the financial year. Despite this, the share price was up a little over 4%. I'm joined on the line by the Sappi Chief Executive Officer, Steve Binney, to take a look at the performance of the business and see what we make of it. Steve, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. I want to start with your initial thoughts and reflections around the year that was, some of the highlights, some of the lowlights. How do you reflect on the year?
Yeah, good evening, Jimmy, and thanks for the opportunity. Yeah, look, it's been a tough year. The macroeconomic conditions were very weak. Interestingly, we started the year pretty strong, and then our year begins in October, and the October to December quarter was pretty good. But thereafter, we just came up against a number of headwinds, you know, the macroeconomic challenges. Then, you know, then we had all the noise around tariffs and the global trade tensions. We're significantly exposed to Europe. We've got a big operation in Europe. The European economy has been subdued for a number of years. In fact, it's never truly recovered from COVID. So we had all these macro headwinds, and ultimately it impacted the selling prices for most of our major products. So, you know, that was challenging. Perhaps the, you know, the biggest driver, or, you know, of the lower profitability relates to our dissolving pulp business. And we'll probably get into more detail on that. But those, the selling prices for that alone dropped, you know, over $100 a ton. And we sell 1.3 million tons. And that alone had a dramatic impact on our profitability. On the highlights side, you know, I think we, you know, we've taken initiatives to control our costs. We completed a major project in the US during the year, and we're very excited about that. And that's going to increase profitability as we move forward. The investment cycle that we've been in is now behind us, and there's a strong focus on debt reduction and cash generation as we move forward.
Now, obviously, operating in such a difficult environment has its own sets of challenges. Steve, I want to get a sense of what the business has done from a strategic point of view to understandably control the things that you are able to control. I see there are some areas within the business and some segments within the business that fared better, and there are some measures that you've put in place. Take us through just what the year has allowed for the business to look at strategically going forward.
Yeah. Look, strategically, we... Historically, Sappi has been a graphic paper business, and obviously with the shift towards digital and away from the traditional uses of graphic paper, magazines, newspapers and the likes, that has put pressure on us. And we've tried to focus and transform the business away from that towards growing segments. And the two broad areas that we have been making investments in over a series of a number of years is firstly dissolving pulp, which goes into textiles. It's a product that competes with cotton and polyester, which are do not have the same environmental footprint. So this is a greener product, and we're very excited about the growth prospects. And then on the packaging side, there's been a strong shift away from plastics to paper, once again, because of the sustainability green story. And we've been making a series of investments there. It's not something that you can transform overnight. It takes time. It takes investments. But the business is in a much better place from a product mix perspective than where it was, say, 10 years ago. At that time, we were 80% graphic paper. Today, we're less than 40%. And we'll probably be 30% in the next year or two ahead. So this year was another important step in that direction. We made the investment in the US at our Somerset, Maine mill, a big investment for us, $500 million. It's been very successful for us, and we're very excited about the prospects going forward. We are a very strong domestic producer in North America, in the US. Obviously, there's been lots of noise around tariffs, and there have been a lot of negative implications for Sappi being a global producer. But the fact that we are a domestic producer in the US has created significant opportunities for us.
Steve, I want to take a look at some of the other line items from a balance sheet perspective and just get your thoughts around what the balance sheet looks like. I know there was some special items that reduced your earnings by just over $150 odd million, but there's also some increase from a debt perspective. There were some issuances of some new bonds as well. Take me through how some of these movements have now allowed you to reposition the balance sheet to tackle what lies ahead in the new year.
Yeah, let me take the key ones in turn. I mean, firstly, the special item, what we call special items, that predominantly relates to impairments that we've taken. And you, in your opening comments, you referred to the loss that we made. The loss is not an operating loss. It relates to the impairments that we made. And it's primarily in Europe. Europe, as I touched on earlier, is a challenging place to do business. We've been cleaning up our asset portfolio and taking write-downs and closing assets are not profitable anymore. That's a proactive process that we've been going through and matching our capacity to the demand that is out there, and we've taken our pain. On the debt side, as I've touched on already, we did complete the big project, and that's the main reason for the increase in debt. Those projects are now behind us, and our number one focus over the next 2 or 3 years is to reduce debt. We're going to be focusing on efficiencies. As I said already, we're taking out costs, but it's not just Europe. We're looking at all our operations, focusing on efficiencies and cost containment. And all of those initiatives combined, you know, we're confident that we can pay down debt over the next 2 or 3 years, and that it has peaked. Specifically on the bonds that you referred to earlier in the year, we did have to refinance. We had some euro bonds that were maturing in 2026, and we took the opportunity to refinance those with new bonds, euro bonds, which are maturing in 2032. So that was a very smooth process, and we got lots of support from the bond investors to complete that transaction.
Steve, before I let you go, I want to get your thoughts on going into 2026. Obviously, the challenging times could very well persist. Some of these things are well beyond businesses' control, and it's important to stay focused and stay the course with your own strategy. How are you feeling going into the new financial year?
Yeah, you're right. The challenges are still out there. There's still lots of noise about the global tariffs and trade flows and the likes, and some of the major economies continue to underperform. We do think things will progressively get better as we move through 2026. We've already seen a little bit of positive price movement in dissolving pulp, for example. But I don't think it's going to be a sharp recovery. It's going to be gradual. But ultimately, you know, we do think things will improve. And we've got the ramp up of the new machine that we've got. That's going to give us it's going to give us an extra 250,000 tons of volumes, which will have a material impact on our profitability. But as you say, it's a strong focus on what we can control. We do think market conditions will improve in time. But at the moment, focus on internal measures that we can control, keep the costs under control, make sure we maximize production and operational efficiency.
Focusing on the controllable aspects of a business and still keeping in mind the bigger picture, that is what Sappi Limited intends to do going into the 2026 financial year. All the best to you, Steve, and the team. We look forward to catching up as the year progresses. Steve Binney, Chief Executive Officer of Sappi, joining us to take a look at the year that was.
There's a song that goes, "Money can't buy me love." And that's true. But then they told us, all you need is love, which anybody with a mortgage will tell you, most certainly is not true. Love won't pay your parking tickets or your student loan. It's also needy. It requires effort, availability, constant care. But more importantly, love requires time. And while money can't buy you love, it can certainly free up some of your time. Time to spend on the things you love, with the people you love. And if you're looking, maybe even time to find the one you love. That's why, after 50 years of investing, we've learned that time is the greatest gift of all. And the good news is, if you invest early, time gives you money. And then money gives you more time to do the things you love. And don't you love that about investing? Ellen Gray, long-term investing. Ellen Gray is an authorized FSP.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This interview is brought to you by SAB. 130 years of being committed to South Africa. And we're taking a look at the involvement of SAB in sport, particularly in football. I know this exact conversation is going to excite a good friend of mine who also happens to be the host of the show that follows this one. And that is Michael Abramson of the Top Sport Show. He speaks about these sorts of conversations all the time. It's very nice that I get to have this conversation from a business perspective with the brand manager of Carling Black Label at SAB, Nonjabulo Ndwandwe. She joins me on the line now to take a look at Carling's involvement in sport. Nonjabulo, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. I think when I remember back to 2011, or there or thereabouts, just after the World Cup, and Carling Black Label started going into this involvement of the fan in sport, I thought maybe they've got something right. Maybe this is not going to take off. But fast forward to where we are today, and it's probably one of the most loved things about South African football. Tell me about how this came about. How did the Carling team put this together?
Good evening, everybody. And thank you so much for having me on your show. It's so exciting for us. And in fact, we are just ahead of our much anticipated semi-final fixtures happening this weekend. So if you are in Durban, please come and join us on Saturday and Sunday. But really, the Carling Cup was born of a very interesting insight. And I think something that we all, you know, have. And it's about when I have a voice, I feel inspired. And we really found that fans, particularly in South Africa, and you put it so rightly, we had this incredible time with the FIFA World Cup, and now we come back to local football, and they just felt like they didn't have a voice. They felt like they could be better coaches. They felt like they could make better decisions. And that's exactly what we did when we went into the space and partnered with the league to give fans a voice and truly empower them, not just from, you know, an activation point of view, but for a real fixture, right? For what they like to watch on broadcast and in the stadiums.
Nonjabulo, this feels like it's a little more than just a campaign, because I think back to when it was just the Carling knockout. We just had the two big teams in terms of the two Soweto Giants, effectively. We've now gone beyond that. We've added more products. We've added more involvement from a fan perspective. It's not just about saying, hey, we're having this campaign or this competition. It really is about listening to the fans, because each year Carling comes out with something new. How is it that you're able to do that? That you're able to continuously stay in touch with the fans and give them what it is that they want?
100%. So if you just take a short journey down memory lane, we started off in 2011 with what we called, you know, the ultimate Carling Cup. And this was the Soweto Derby, a beautiful fixture. We all know that is just so electrifying. Full FNB Stadium, very beautiful, where we get to see the two sort of biggest South African soccer clubs from a fan base perspective and also just heritage, you know, going head to head together. But our fans told us to say, you know what, you were only representing the voices of only two teams. And if we know, we have 16 teams in our Premier Soccer League. And so year on year, through very, very kind of big social listening and us always going back to the fans and that core insight, we've been able to evolve the campaign to, you know, we did Avulegile Masango that included then four clubs in the PSL and saw the Carling Cup trophy be lifted by Mamelodi Sundowns, new team, for the very first time. And then in 2023, we introduced then the knockout tournament, which is the current format we're in, where we then take all 16 teams. They all have a shot to become the champions of the Carling knockout, who then play against an all fan selected all-star team. I mean, that's fantasy football brought to life. So really, we always hear from the fans. We're so excited to continue this fan-led innovation.
So Nonjabulo, as we head into the semi-finals, you mentioned that the semi-finals are taking place this weekend in Durban. Those that are out there that are able to make it, that are wanting to get involved, can very much get involved. I imagine this isn't where it ends. It's not as though after the tournament concludes, there's going to be nothing else that's going to be said and done from a Carling team. What are you guys working on next? How are you guys starting to use already what I imagine you have in terms of insights from this tournament to plan for the next one?
For sure. So currently we are in our semi-finals. So if you are in Durban, please come at Moses Mavhida. We have a fixture starting at 3 p.m. We have Orlando Pirates taking on Richards Bay. It's going to be a beautiful fixture. Then the next day we have Maroon Magellans versus Golden Arrows. We're looking forward to our final that will be happening on the 6th. And then a very coveted Carling Cup final, as I said, happening on the 13th. And we're back here in Durban, where we will then see the team that the fans have selected of all players in the PSL, including some of the Disky players, take on the champions. And this is just some of the innovation that, you know, we've been bringing. We are looking forward to see what more we can bring. We also believe, I just want to tell everybody to stay tuned on a very exciting project that's going to hit your screens later on this month, that really unpacks the story and really shows the commitment that we have had to the journey, particularly around soccer and how soccer can be such a big impact for not only our business as SA Breweries, but, you know, within the soccer fraternities. So, yeah, people should stay tuned. We definitely do have some exciting things in store.
Nonjabulo, before I let you go, I want to come back to the importance of these sorts of partnerships and collaborations for a business like SAB that has been around for 130 years in communities, to be able to sit back and say, we're still involved in communities and we're involved in a way that goes beyond just the sale of our products. We're actually getting involved at levels where communities can be inspired and enjoy what we enjoy as well. Take me through the importance of that in a bit of a nutshell.
100%. It's so important for us. I think Carling Cup particularly and Carling Black Label is such a great depiction of what a brand or what a corporation can do in a community for a very long time. We've had this campaign and this movement for over 14 years where we've been empowering the fans, particularly with a mechanic that we have that's Be the Champion Coach, where we give individuals an opportunity to become professional coaches. And through the development of the campaign, I think something that's very close to my heart, particularly that's attached to Carling Black Label, is this platform of no excuse and us being able to venture out into tackling some very difficult social issues and being very committed for over 8 years in that platform. So really, it's exciting. I think with some of our mechanics as well that we give to the players, that they're able to win some of, you know, the match money in terms of some of the mechanics like Man of the Match, where they get awarded 100,000. We've seen that they've gone on to do a lot of personal development and development within their families. And so for us, it's not just a campaign, it's not just entertainment, but there's real impact and positive impact, you know, that a campaign like Carling Cup does, as well as a platform very closely associated to a Carling Black Label like No Excuse does for our communities.
A brand that is focused on communities and ensuring that bringing communities together continues to be the work that they do. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thank you so much to the brand manager of Carling Black Label at South African Breweries, Nonjabulo Ndwandwe, for taking us through the role of the business within communities, as well as what it is that they continue to do from an innovation perspective in sport. This interview was brought to you by SAB. 130 years of being committed to South Africa.
Commitment is not just brewing beer. It's brewing hope. It's brewing dreams.
It's brewing a legacy. For over a century, believing in something bigger. Commitment is brewing a promise to step up when the nation calls. To brew moments that matter, that bring us together. For you, for the next generation. For 130 years and forever, SAB, forever committed to a future with more cheers.
South Africa, be sharp, not for persons under the age of 18.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
SME of the Week is powered by Capitec Business Banking. Start out or scale up with Capitec, the business bank for everyone. Capitec is an authorized FSP, FSP number 46669. Terms and conditions apply. It is SME time on a Thursday, and while we usually spotlight small businesses doing exceptionally well for themselves, this week we're doing things a little bit differently. We are taking a look at some of the supporting businesses behind small businesses, namely in the form of the Capitec Business Banking. This was something that was born out of the old mercantile bank, and over the last couple of years has taken huge strides in making sure that small businesses are supported in South Africa. I'm joined on the line by Business Bank Executive Carl Kumbia to take a look at the Capitec Business Banking business in a bit more detail and see what we make of it. Carl, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. For many years, I think from as early as Capitec's initial inception, it was always put forward as a bank that focused on simplicity and transparency, especially with the personal banking offering. Is that still what the business banking offering has built its foundation upon? And what does that look like for a business banking division?
Yeah, definitely. So as you mentioned earlier, Capitec bought Mercantile as a foundation in which to build its business bank. And I always thought, you know, when we were put up for sale many years ago, I went to Ferry and we said, you know, with Capitec, what it's done in the retail space and with its brand and balance sheet and knowledge of scored lending, you know, combine that with our business banking knowledge at Mercantile, we thought we could create something quite special. Yeah. And then we went about building the new business bank, and we built everything on the four fundamentals of Capitec. And those four fundamentals of simplicity, exactly like you said, how do you keep it simple? One account for everyone. Affordability, how do we make sure we're most affordable in the market by a long way? Accessibility, yeah, where you could be able to open an account online in your lounge at home, you know, within minutes. You got internet banking, you got an app, etc. And then personalized service. We really wanted to keep that mercantile personalized service. So how do you do that at scale? So we had to build some real good innovation around that as well.
Carl, let's zoom in on the affordability aspect for a second. Business owners, particularly those that we spotlight on this segment of the show, are very, very rand conscious. I mean, every cent counts to a small business, especially if you're trying to grow the business. And when you look at affordability, things in the banking space, things like banking costs and service fees become very important. Tell us about what it is that Capitec Business Banking is doing in that respect.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. And we just feel that business banking has been a segment that's been overcharged for years. Yeah? And why should businesses pay more per transaction than the retail space? You know, all payments run off the same rails. So we just thought that didn't make any sense either. So we decided to be completely transparent in our offering. So it's one offering for everyone. It doesn't matter if you're a factory with 10,000 employees or a hairdresser with just yourself, you pay the same. Yeah. So you've got the same account, a global business account, and you'll pay the same per transaction. And we also wanted to make sure, because if you want to open an account somewhere else at a traditional bank, there's so many offerings that there's a bundled this, and you never really know what you're paying until you get your bank charges at the end of the month. And we said, no, we want to keep it transparent. And we came up with this this concept in March this year, 1-2-3-6-10, which cuts across the whole of Capitec. And it's R1 transaction, Capitec, R2 to another bank, R3 for a debit order, which is way lower than the rest, R6 for a real-time payment, and R10 to draw money at an ATM. So that's the same whether you're retail or business. And we estimate we're saving our small businesses that bank with us up to 50% in bank charges. And the larger the business, the more the volume, we're saving up to 90% in bank charges. Yeah, so it's making a real difference to the cost line for small businesses.
That sounds very encouraging, Carl, and especially for those businesses that are fairly new that might want to be trying things out. We have them on the show quite often. We spotlight some of the smaller side hustles and full-time ventures that people go through. And I guess the question then for someone who's running a small business or who is looking at establishing a small business is, what kind of support do I get from the business banking community? I think often when businesses look to explore these areas or people look to explore new businesses, they're worried about whether or not they'll be supported. And I guess this is where a good banking partner does come in handy.
Yeah, for sure. We did a lot of research for the small businesses. And if you had to cut through everything, it's basically three big needs for a business. One is you want an affordable bank account. As you say, you're starting out, you can't afford massive fees. The second one is you want to be able to accept payment electronically, right? So obviously you've got an app and online banking there, but you also want to have a point of sale device that's really affordable so you can accept payment if you're a retailer. And then lastly, access to finance. You know, to us, access to finance is everything. You know, we've worked out that if you can lend a small business 1 month turnover through a working capital facility, like an overdraft, you can basically double their turnover for the year and double their profits for the year. So it helps the business grow. So those are the three things we thought we have to really get those three right. and we feel we've got it right now. Yeah, we're able to offer that to the market.
Carl, before I let you go, businesses that are listening to this conversation, and we have a lot of businesses that do tune into the show, a lot of these businesses come from previously underserved communities where they might not have even had a business banking offering. But that's changing. The world is rapidly changing. Business is rapidly changing. We're living in a digital age. How then does a business bank position itself to be able to, one, adapt to the changing landscape and environment, but still be able to offer the best to the clients?
Yeah, I think we decided up front when we built the new business bank, we wanted to be digitally led but relationship-based. So as a small business, you must be able to do everything. You haven't got time to spend time in branches and things. You want to do everything you can pretty much online, through your app or sort of while you're sitting at your office or at home. But
and that's why it's important to be able to support businesses from every aspect of what it is that they require. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks so much to the business bank executive at Capitec, Carl Kumbia, for joining us to take a look at Capitec's role in small businesses. Inspired by the SME of the week? Start your own business or scale up and save up to 50% on fees with Capitec, the business bank for everyone. Capitec is an authorized FSP, FSP number 46669. Terms and conditions apply.
That's the sound of your business growing. Whether you're starting out or scaling up, turn your passion into profit with Capitec Business Banking. Save up to 50% on fees. Get fast credit approvals, personalized support, and Forex for your business. Open your business banking account on our app. Bank on better with Capitec, the business bank for everyone. Capitec is an authorized FSP, 46669. T's and C's apply.
It's just gone 7 o'clock. Greg Host is standing by to give you the latest round of evening news, followed by Michael Abramson and the top sport team. From my side, good night.